Hey guys, it's Anna, and you are listening to the Hannah Farhi Show. So today we have with us Dr. Azra Fatima, a clinical psychologist who's specialized in child and adolescent psychology and behavioral medicine. She's got over 5 years of experience, and her expertise lies in dealing children and adolescents with learning disabilities, ADHD, autism, adjustment issues, emotional problems, and managing psychological problem of patients suffering from chronic illness.
Welcome to the show, Dr. Azra. It's a delight to have you here.
Same here. I'm glad to be here. Yeah.
So how is everything rolling post-pandemic? Are you back or is it like virtual sessions? How is it
All good. It was though like challenging where we couldn't reach people who are really in need.
Right.
But yeah, as things have been sensitized now, like slowly we are gearing up to normalize.
Yeah, so the topic that we have chosen and we have discussed earlier a bit about mental health of children, I'm sure a lot of audience might relate how challenging it has been for children and for parents as well. So I think parents have experienced a lot during pandemic and post-pandemic, the relationship between their children and theirs. So what do you think, like after pre-pandemic, during and post-pandemic, what do you think is a healthy and unhealthy parenting? Because we see a lot of extremes nowadays and parents are really struggling. They're trying their best, but they are struggling a lot to find that right balance and to have a healthy relationship with their children. So what do you have to say on this?
True. This pandemic, I think like most of the parents have come to this notion that like, okay, parenting is a little stressful because 24/7 they were like with the kids, they're not going to school and like they're at home. So this was the time where the parents introspectively like, either as a parent, we are going wrong or like children are like either blaming, it's kind of more of blame game happened. But parents also felt parenting is a little stressful and like, but they didn't have, I think, idea where the stress they are going through, the children were also going through the same stress. So when we say like, what is healthy and unhealthy parenting, there's like nothing as such, I tell you. There's nothing kind of like healthy parenting and unhealthy parenting. Unhealthy is definitely, if you define unhealthy parenting, definitely parenting where either you have been physically abusing your child, neglecting your child, or you are giving like emotional abuse to your child, definitely comes in under unhealthy parenting. But when you talk about healthy parenting, for example, like, see, we tell that all the veggies are healthy, right? But cabbage and rooted vegetables, we tell patients with thyroid to avoid these vegetables. So it's kind of that. As your child's requirements and needs, you need to just adapt your parenting style, which is like, we need to adapt based on the needs of the child, then it will be a healthy parenting, you can say. Right? So if you practice a kind of like, not perfect, but at least like a good parenting model, if you practice, what we need to, as a parent, we need to be like a little reasonable with the commands we give to the child. Sometimes you just tell your child to do something and they just rebel back or they just ignore it because they don't find it reasonable. If you explain them, and also as a parent, they, most of the time it happens, even my childhood, there were a few questions which we used to ask our parents, but that was just brushed off with giving no importance. So as a parent, we need to understand that like even child has their cognition, so they actually analyze every situation, they analyze the problem solutions. So we need to, it is important for us to give them a proper answer to their queries and explain the benefits and repercussions of any situations. So you cannot just go and imply a rule and have a controlling approach on your child. You need to explain the benefits and repercussions of that situation. So yeah, if you take few points like this, definitely your parenting style would be modified and you can deal with your child very easily. When I say it's like we define different kind of parenting style. But what I say, your parenting style has to be very adaptive based on your child's age and also the situation. See, I cannot be controlling to a teenage.
Right. True.
The same child, when the child was in the stage of like 3 years or 4 years for kind of like training for toilet training or things like that, where I used to, where as a parent, I used to say no. So the child used to listen. But if I say this no to the same child of 13-year-old, he will like question me back, or he'll just like show tantrums. So I cannot use the same style. And also, based on situations, also we need to modify our styles. Sometimes we need to be neglectful. Sometimes we need to be authoritative. Sometimes we need to be authoritarian. So yeah, I mean, like, if you collaborate all the styles based on situation and needs of the child, that would be effective.
Okay. So in certain cases where parents, you know, they feel like they want to have that strong and healthy relationship with their children, but they won't be able to express much. Like back then, if you see like our childhood, I don't think a lot of parents were very expressive. Now this trend has become like being more open to parents. Parents, they don't open up much. So what do you have to them? How can they crack their bubble? And now when they want to be more open, what do you have to say to them? Are there any, you know, icebreakers? You need to ask certain questions, or perhaps they have to share their stories. How is it like?
First and foremost, we need to work on the communication pattern we are following with the child.
Right.
It has to be in a way where you give the open boundary for the child to like answer your questions and even ask a question to you. So that boundary is important, where the communication has to be very smooth flowing. For example, like we have seen communication patterns in few parents where they're kind of like, okay, if they say something, that is the last line they would be.
Yeah.
There's no yes and no. There's no kind of like chance of change. So those children get like have a difficulty in actually expressing their emotions to their own parents. And that's why they like find this that nurturance and love or kind of like acceptance in peer group. So for as a parent, I mean like when you said you need to have some icebreakers for this, I say like it has to be like your communication pattern need to be flexible, and we need to avoid dichotomous communication or kind of double binding communication. For example, we say something in this situation and we deny the same thing in the next situation. So the child has a confusion over like what is actually want from me. And even like for children, I mean like expression, like 80% of their expression happens in their play activity. And unfortunately, because we are not allowing them to go to grounds, we are not allowing them to go outside and play, they are doing it at home. And when they are playing at home, they obviously make noise. We cannot expect them to like quietly play, right?
Right.
So at that moment, as a parent, if you stop them, so that means you are stopping their expressions, or stopping the ventilation of their emotions. So these things you need to be careful about.
So how do mental health impairments develop in early childhood? What are certain things that the child see and they feel that they're stressed or depressed? Because a lot of times we often talk about mental health in adults or teenagers. Children are like, you know, that thing doesn't cross our mind that, oh, even the child has got mental health. Whereas it exists, like there is physical health, there is also mental health. So can you please, put a light on this?
Talk about impairments in childhood, I mean like mental health impairments in childhood, we need to look in kind of multi-factors. Few impairments can be due to developmental delays because they don't reach their milestones on time. I mean like the speaking is late, the walking is late. Usually these kids are being ignored by parents, saying that, okay, his father was also same or his mother was also same. And they ignore this. Like delay in speech, delay in walk, but that again turn out to be something serious in future. And second aspect is the neurodevelopmental disorders, which can be really identified at the early stage. For example, autism is something which is like kind of neurodevelopmental disorder, which is identified before 18 months of the age. So 18 months ke pehle, I mean, like, they show that like they don't respond to the sound in spite of the intact hearing and no kind of like functional issues in the hearing, but they don't respond to the sound. They are kind of like emotionally, they are kind of little fussy. And eye contact is not proper. So these are the kind of like a few risk factors which we can identify at early stage, but we ignore saying that, okay, like child, I mean, like as the child grows, these things will resolve. As a parent, usually they think like that. And few other impairments when you talk about it is kind of like chronic physical illness. Chronic physical illness is like few children are there who we just say that, okay, I mean, like his or her immune system is very low. And like, it's that child who like bar bar bimar padta hai. But we never give importance to his emotional and mental health aspect. We just say, okay, like cold and flu, every month they go through cold and flu, either any kind of like infections. You go to a doctor to do a physical checkup, you take medicines, you take that, but we never give importance to the mental aspect. So these physical symptoms can also be a comorbid condition of your emotional trauma or mental trauma the child is going through. One thing when you talk like mental health in children are like very difficult to identify because they don't show the same symptoms as an adult is showing. For example, adult with depression, definitely you can see that with their affect, with their voice. Even they can express, hey, okay, I'm feeling low from these many days and all. But children, they don't have this ability to express. In spite of that, they show the opposite behaviors. Like a child can be depressive. The same child can be either like showing a lot of temper tantrums, making a lot of noise, making kind of a lot of mischievous behaviors. But you kind of like get confused with his behavior issue and actually the depression problem. So to identify mental health issues in children are a little tricky, you say. But they show the dichotomous way of expressing their problems. Yeah, I mean, like a child who's been going to school normally for many years, suddenly like there's a dropout or suddenly there's a kind of absenteeism. We don't identify those things. We just say that, like, okay, he's being lazy. He's not showing interest in studies. But we give importance to what is exactly happening inside his brain or what is exactly going through. So, yeah, I mean, like, childhood issues can be identified as early as possible. And it has to be done that way because if it has not been treated or not been identified at the right age, that will again lead to some major issues in their young adulthood or adulthood.
All right. So during like infancy, where the doctor expects the child to have routine checkups, you know, there is a vaccine for like at least 6 months or 1 year, whatever the time period is. Is there any, you know, a check where parents have or they have with their psychologist or doctors where a child come for checkup for their mental health and how the neuro health, whatever it is there something like that? And how are parents trained? Are parents given, you know, first time mothers or first time parents, are they given certain instructions or, you know, certain things or certain guidelines that they need to observe in children? Is it something like that? How does it work?
Unfortunately, I mean, definitely there are things available as such where we say like developmental screen tests are there, mental health screening for children are there. We have few scales developed, even like we have mode of assessing those things. But unfortunately, as we are like very open to go to for a vaccine and get a physical checkup done, we are not open to do this for mental health. Like here we need to have a lot of kind of sensitization among people to remove the stigma of like having this routine checkup for their mental health as well, because there are things are available there. It's not that it's not been, there's no research, there's no kind of sources available. It is there, but like we don't have kind of like, it is not become so accessible to everybody because of a lot of other factors like stigma and lack of awareness.
So like in your area, in your expertise, like you are a clinical psychologist, don't you have like ties between these doctors, pediatric children, like in the same word? At least I don't think that I have come across any, maternity care where they tie up with, neuroscientist or clinical psychologist at early age. Maybe I'm wrong, please correct me. Like, do you think in your area they have where their doctors have meeting with you, and that's where, even the parents can come, and when parents are coming and consulting the doctors can direct the same to the clinical psychologist? Or I don't know how it works, because I just want to ask you so that even the audience get aware of it. Is it something like that? How is it like?
Yeah, I mean, like, see, nowadays where healthcare we talk about, we definitely talk about the multidisciplinary approach.
Mm-hmm, right.
But professional-wise, I think there are a lot of kind of like obstacles happening where there's no kind of clear hierarchy between the doctors and the clinical psychologists. So it unfortunately usually happens that if the child is going through something, I mean, like some emotional issue, if they go to a doctor, the doctor actually rules out with all the blood tests, all the experiments, or what you say, whatever you say. So after that, if they are not again showing any results, that is the last moment when they think of a psychologist or a psychiatric help.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what is that gap. There's definitely a very big professional gap happening.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the approach where definitely, I mean, like for doctors also, if they tell it's not my concern, you need to take them to psychiatrist, even parents won't react it very normally.
Exactly, that's
definitely
so true.
Kind of retaliate,
yeah,
saying that like, okay, I'm getting you to like get a help, and you're saying that my child is a mental not normal.
Probably, I think if the doctors can take one step further, like to explain their parents, because anything coming from the doctor, oh my god, a doctor is saying I have to listen, he must be right. Probably if doctors can break their barrier, I think the communication between parent, child, and doctor and clinical psychologist, that would be a free communication, and everyone sitting in
definitely
one room and one counseling center, that would be very great. And even in the future, if a child wants to communicate, it will be with like going to like doctor for any other health checkup. So these things. So if somebody has to go like to there will be a barrier for parents. Oh my God, today I'm going to a clinical psychologist. Can you believe?
Yeah.
I mean, they feel so reluctant sharing to even their families. Oh my God, I have to go to a clinical psychologist. So where do you think that we should break these barriers, according to you? This, I'm talking from a layman's perspective, but what do you think, like, from the authoritative perspective, like, where can we, make more open and free communications? Do you think it should come from the government? Do you think it should come from the medical side of it, from the health sector? Where do you think it has to be regularized?
Definitely, it has to be from all the sectors as you're speaking. But like, I think as an individual, what we can do from our side is like, see, exactly that's what you are doing, right? As a person, we need to actually create awareness and desensitize people regarding these things.
Mm-hmm.
So if we start doing something like this, people will at least get an awareness of it. And when doctor says to go to a psychiatrist or a clinical psychologist, they should not be kind of like startled.
Right.
If they have awareness and they got desensitized with these issues, then that will be easy for doctors even, and also people like who approach to clinical psychologists.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like boon boon se darya bharta kind of thing.
Right.
We need to start from our front, and then only we can expect anything from the government sector and industry sectors.
Okay, so let's say if a parent is visiting, to you or any clinical psychologist, what do you think, can you give, an image to a patient or anyone who is listening? So what kind of sessions it would be like? Because they are like scared, oh my God, I have to go to a psychologist to consult about my children or about me. So what do you think, how does a session look like, and what happens, how is the interaction with child takes place? Can you give a rough idea to everybody, please?
So yeah, first and foremost, like if you're going to a clinical psychologist or psychologist, they definitely, because they don't use any kind of like equipments or tools like injections or medicines, so it looks vague to people that like what exactly are they doing. So they don't know, but when you speak about the process, we do it for anybody who comes for help. We go through a scientific and like evidence-based process, which mm-hmm. is like either it can be psychotherapy of any kind, play therapy ho gaya, ya fir, art therapy, ya any kind of therapy, mm-hmm. CBT, it has a process. Because it doesn't look like to a normal man or layman, so they think that like, okay, you charge so high and like you are mm-hmm. doing nothing, you're just speaking or you're just asking questions. So I think, I mean, like we need to actually get awareness about these things also. What is this thing? I mean, like, definitely it look vague to you, but what exactly are we doing? But I mean, like when you talk about in-person session, definitely when the client comes to us, we do the like kind of like clinical history we take as any normal doctor takes, and mm-hmm. then we explain the issue to the parents. So that's what we call as a psychoeducation. That actually helps us to have a kind of like cut that barrier between the client and the psychologist. So when we explain them, like psychoeducate them about the problem and psychoeducate about the approach we would be following for the further, that kind of like relax the parents and kind of like they kind of get free from their all the worries and burden. And then like dealing with kids, we usually start initially go with the indirect approach. Basically, like to build a rapport, we go with a lot of indirect approaches, like involving them in play activity or talking to them is kind of like, because we need to have that rapport. So it's not something that like, see, if you go to a psychologist, it's not something like you just get into those jail kind of scenario which has been shown on televisions. It's definitely very kind of like eco-friendly plus client-centered approach what clinical psychologists follow. It's not that what you see in television, so like the asylums and mm-hmm. the psychiatric hospitals. Mm-hmm. So maybe they have this fear of like if you go to a psychiatrist or psychologist, they just give you medicines and you just sleep all the day and there's no help going to happen.
Yeah, because what they project on TV is
true.
Yeah, what the media presents, anything on screens are just not right, because they are giving a completely different True. Picture of what actually is happening. Moving to technology, children and technology, you know, there is a huge discussion about when do one has to introduce screens. You know, some say like after 2 years. There is an extreme like introduce it after 2 years or 3 years. What is right? When is the screens has to be introduced? And after the pandemic and pre and post, we are seeing a lot of discrepancy and a lot of, you know, discussions around this, and everybody's talking about this. So what do you have to say on this?
See, especially in the tech, today's tech world, we cannot say that like, okay, you have to avoid avoid giving gadgets to your kids. It's mm-hmm. all about like technology these days. But yeah. when you speak about right age, see, it's mostly happening is like kind of a blame game sort of thing. We are actually using or looking children as a scapegoat for the lack of attention we are mm-hmm. providing to them. Because we are not able to give them enough time, we just like blame them, saying that like they are always glued with the phone or mm-hmm. glued with TV. But as a parent, we are not giving importance to what exactly we are providing them in the environment. Mm-hmm. See, a common notion between like when the when children are into gadgets or playing games, they basically are in need of achievement, interest, and competition. That they are fulfilling through games online, through watching something online, okay, or some stimulation which is like been provided by the technology. the application, social media. So according to self-driven theory also, human behavior is basically driven by the needs for competence, autonomy and relatedness. Ye cheeze actually unki fulfill ho rahi with gadgets and screen. If as a parent we can feed their needs with some other alternative, then things will be resolved, that they will not complain ki, okay, my children are always glued with screen. You provide them some activity, something which where they can have the sense of achievement, interest and competition, where they can actually have kind of like competency and autonomy in their own thing. So yeah, this can help, but the time gap or time limit of like what is the exact time limit should be given or what is the age, there's no something kind of like theory based question or answer to it. See, as a child, as a parent, what we exactly do, see, you take children out in the public or in a social in the public places, just just that your child should behave well, or just that your child should be controlled, you hand him over the phone so that the child get engaged in the phone and show the positive behavior in the social environment. At the same time, when the child is using that phone at home, you complain. So you are using this mode as kind of a reinforcement for your own benefit.
Right.
And basically as a parent, what they can do is like, I mean, like we need to have a kind of a control, parental control on the devices can be one option. Definitely a time limit should be there, that like in a day, if your like online classes are happening, okay, you have no excuse, you have to use your gadget. But apart from your online classes and the use of gadget, what is that time you need to use it for your entertainment purpose? That should be not more than 1 hour. So that has to be very strict and consistent. See, I mean, like, aaj aap bole ki, okay, every day you are using your phone for 1 hour, and the next day some guests come to your home and you want your child to be engaged, you give them the phone for more than 1 hour. So if that consistency is not being made, that is giving the wrong message to a child. Saying that, like, if you're not present in my environment, if a parent is not there, if your attention is not there to me, you are replacing that attention with a phone. So that makes child get a kind of negative emotion towards parents, as well as they get feel more of kind of power involved in the phone.
So you mean like, I understand the screen time and stuff, but is there nothing or no research on when the screen has to be introduced, like? Is there nothing like that, or is it just a myth that is going around after 2 years? Is that
not like, see, I mean, like, research says that like first 5 years of I mean, like your child is crucial. That is the time where the child, I mean, like the brain has been like kind of brain connections are been developing faster than any other age. Okay. So if you avoid giving this phone in this first 5 years, and giving them a lot of stimulation through communication, through activities, through kind of like a lot of play, role plays or physical activity, that will help the child to have kind of like strong brain development. Okay. And introducing phone during this time would be kind of like very risky or very harmful, because this is the time where the brain is developing faster. And if you introduce phone or any gadget to them, that is actually making them kind of having only one-sided stimulation. If a child is watching a phone or like the rhymes on phone, they are learning the language but not kind of reciprocate the emotions and cannot reciprocate the communication language, right? So they can only, the input is happening. There's no output happening.
So true, yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah, so this 5 years, we need to have some stimulation which can be both the ways, the input and the output has to be there. So involved play, role plays, activities, physical activities, everything at this stage would help. After 5 years, I mean, like, yeah. I cannot say I'm like, this is very healthy if you give it after 5 years. But yeah, if there's no option, but this 5 years, at least first 5 years, you need to restrict
right.
screen time too. Yeah.
So how can one make sure the overall development of a child? What are the things that contribute to the overall growth?
Yeah, I mean, like, see, when you talk about growth and development of child, we talk about mostly, majorly in four different aspects.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that is your physical development, your emotional development, your social development, and your cognitive development.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so physical development, see, I mean, like, physical development, the child is, like, attaining all the milestones, like, right from birth till mm-hmm. the age of, like, 6 to 10 years, like, till walking by self, jumping, throwing, mm-hmm. all this comes under physical activities where your mm-hmm. motor abilities are being okay. included. Motor and fine motors.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even like from standing to holding a pencil mm-hmm. and picking small things. So if the child is doing that in the age gap and then the developmental milestones are happening, then you can say that, okay, if the child is physically healthy or the physical development is normal. Okay. And then it comes to your social development. This social development involves that they are like different activities where they're involved at the age of from 3 to above 6 and 7. They get into activities like socializing or having like, apart from your parents, you try to kind of make attachment to other people. Like, for at 3 years, they start replacing your parents with your teacher, that emotional attachment, right? And they are like kind of mingling with their own peer group.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they are kind of having all the pretend play and these activities are there. So socially, we can say they are socially and like the social development is normal. Whereas cognitive, like definitely age-wise, if they learn the basic concepts, if they learn kind of like use critical, I mean, like concrete thinking, keep showing curiosity of asking questions of like why, how.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, like we can say that okay, cognitively they are developing health. Mm-hmm. This is how, I mean, like based on the every milestones they have that particular age, if they are covering mm-hmm. those milestones as per their age, then it's a healthy development.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I will come to the final questions. Like, last you, what are, like for the first time parents or first time mothers, what do you have to suggest to them? Because everybody is giving them advices. There are a lot of bloggers, and everybody is out there who's sharing their own experiences. So, I mean, there is a lot of information and a lot of, you know, even our home traditions, there is a lot of things that is going, oh my god, I did this, you shouldn't do this, or I didn't do this, probably you should do this, or my parents did this, my grandparents did this, everybody did this, oh my, make sure that you do this or don't do this. There's so many advices. What do you have to say to the first time parents? And if you could suggest few books, resources to first time parents or who are not even first time parents, or somebody who's just who just wants to learn and know more about what all happens, you know, during the early age of child, and how can they how can they learn and how they can grow and probably suggest somebody else. Yeah, what do you have to say to them?
I can only say that like first time parents, we there definitely a lot of kind of suggestions, things, like information mm-hmm. you get from sources, and also you also look for things to get answers from different places.
Right.
But mm-hmm. what you need to think is like, see, at least for first child, you need to make your transition so smooth without having this anxiety. What happens? Such parents who are kind of like always kind of anxious about their child or the parenthood, they actually end up imposing this anxiety in your child.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, or you kind of like induce this and same anxiety you have been going through in your child. So for example, I mean, like, if the child even like start crying, a small sound, you just mm-hmm. go. So So that is, yeah, that is anxiety there in you, which is actually can turn out harmful to be a child, harmful to the child. So what I say, like, rather than going and gathering the information, you as a parent, what you have to do is, like, you need to be like, practice few activities which makes you calm, which makes you, like, kind of mindful activities, or you have to get involved in activities or hobbies you like to you feel good in, because these kind of feeling actually give you yourself a positive attitude towards your own self, and also develop confidence in you to handle your child. So you don't have to have kind of like do PhD in your parenthood or do something like you read this, read that, gather information, and you, because see, every experience is not same. Every parent's experience can be different. They have different social situations. They have different social factors, emotional factors. It cannot imply to your parenting, right? So you need to be like, at least for the first child, make a child as kind of like learning step, and make at least like make yourself calm and composed, and like make your parenting as smooth as possible, instead of going into something like this of gathering information, doing this, doing that. Because your self-care, for example, your self-care, your mental health, your physical health, just take care of these things. Because these things, if you take care properly, that is definitely giving a positive impact on yourself and also on your child.
So last few words, would you like to say anything to everybody, you know, parents and who are single mothers, or everybody, because everybody's experiences is different. Any last message that you would like to give? And if you could also share your social media handles, that would be great. Just to let our audience know. And yeah, I can share it in the description box as well. Yeah, last message, sure. And your how they can contact you, please. Yeah.
Yeah, I have a social media handle, which is like Minded with Dr. Azra. That's a kind of like, I've started very recently. Definitely, I look forward to develop it and like post being constant on that. But yeah, last message to everybody, I mean, like a parent or whoever, I mean, like, see, mental health is something not, mentally is not something which is like something negative to talk about. It is something like as important as your physical health, as you take care of your flu, cold, and your cough, you have to take care of your sad mood, low mood, or kind of any emotional turmoil you're going through. So it is not necessary. See, if you have got some physical issue, it's not that you have got cancer or some chronic illness, right? Same like if you're going through some emotional trauma, it doesn't mean that you're mental or you're psycho, what common terms we use. So that's why I mean, like, going to a doctor and get a check of your mental health as equal to as your physical health can actually help you to overcome lot many things. See, one is this is for the mental health. And as a parent, one thing you need to make clear that you don't focus on things which your child is like not able or not able to do, or kind of like things which are not there in your kids. Don't try to instill those things. Try to actually enhance the ability which the child is having already. So I give this example of a donut where everybody enjoys donut, right? Everybody like, feels yummy, but
you literally made me smile by saying donut. Yeah, please.
As a parent, what you do, you know, I mean, like, there's a donut, but you just give importance to the hole which is not there, that is not filled with any cream, no bun, that hole. So as a parent, we actually the child is there who can be like, who is a donut, right? But parent focus only on the hole, not at the cream and the layer which has been glazed about.
A wonderful example. I'm going to remember and share it with others too.
sure. So as a parent, actually focus on the outer layer, not something which is not there. Then only you can actually embrace your parenting as well as your child's childhood.
Wow. So everybody, that was Dr. Azra Fatima. I'm sure I enjoyed talking to her. I'm sure that you have definitely enjoyed listening to us. So she is also a clinical consultant at ISLA Center for Psychological Wellness. Can you please share your, you know, timings or anything or contact number of ISLA Center of Psychological Wellness? And that would be great. And how are your sessions virtual as well? If there's anyone who wants to book a session with you, how is the process like?
Yeah, actually, I'll share contact details with you, which you can post in the description.
Right.
But mm-hmm. At ISLA, I'm available from Monday to Friday, 10 to 4 o'clock. So between that, if you need any appointment or any consultations, you just need to take an appointment a fair day, one day before.
Thank you so much, Azra, Dr. Azra, and it was wonderful talking to you. I enjoyed it. And we hope that we will be staying connected. And probably if time permits, and we will have some other session in the future as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.